Break Up America, Time to Stump the Experts. Each week at this time, H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, give you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. Please note that if this year we use your question, which is postmarked any time between now and December 31st, you will get not the usual $10 in war stamps, but a $50 war bond, plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get, in addition, $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, Please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, spontaneous and unrehearsed as ever, Information, Please offers tonight as its board of experts John Kieran of the New York Sun and Franklin P. Adams, together with our very distinguished guests, Senator Lister Hill of Alabama and Senator Joseph H. Ball of Minnesota. Senators Ball and Hill, together with Senators Burton and Hatch, form a famous quartet of forward-looking statesmen, about whom, by the way, by the sheerest coincidence, the Honorable Franklin P. Adams has written a poem. And with your kind permission, Mr. Adams, I shall read it. These are the lads that are hard to match, Burton and Ball and Hill and Hatch. Boys who have courage not to be still, Burton and Ball and Hatch and Hill. Men with voices sure and certain, Ball and Hatch and Hill and Burton. Cheers for the senators, best of all, Burton and Hill and Hatch and Ball. These lines, by the way, do not constitute an endorsement of any guest in this program. Any resemblance of any living person or persons is purely coincidental. Now, gentlemen, we shall go on with the first question, which comes to us from M. Solomon of Montreal, Canada. Very interesting question. What would probably be taking place, gentlemen, if you found the following in the same place at the same time? Now, these are all chemical formulae. Assuming that they're all together in the same place at the same time, what do you suppose would be going on? I'll read them, all four of them. B2H2, C2H5OH, H2O, C12H22O11. Now, if you had all those in the one room at the same time, what do you suppose would be going on? Mr. Kieran?
I think four fellows would be having a toddy.
How do you figure that out, Mr.
Well, I don't know whether these fellows drink or not, but B2H2 is an offhand reference to the four senators.
That's right.
And the C2H5OH is alcohol.
Yes. Come right out, please.
And the next one you read off was
H2O.
Water, and the other was sugar.
Yes.
Well, that sounds to me like a toddy.
It certainly is. That would be a senatorial party. Mr. Adams.
However, B2H2 would be two of boron, pardon my pointing, and two of hydrogen.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, by gosh. But do you mind letting the senator stand in for your friends boron and hydrogen, who are now noted also good congressmen in their
sure.
way? Yes, the B2H2 combination is short for Senators Ball, Burton, Hatch, and Hill, who have worked together on some very progressive legislation. Senator Hill, Senator Ball, this meant nothing to you, this little chemical arrangement of ours?
I recognize the water and the alcohol.
Well, sometimes that's enough. If you have enough of both, you generally don't recognize anything. Now, we'll try the next one from Robert G. Murphy of Menominee, Michigan. We're going to have some speeches read out to us. Now, each of these speeches, there are going to be three of them, might have preceded the passage of a constitutional amendment by Congress. Identify the amendment and tell us who was the president at the time. Is that clear? We have to get all three out of three on this. Let's have the first.
They belong in the home. To permit them to mingle in a man's world might encourage on ladylike behavior. They'd only do as the husbands tell them anyway.
Senator Hill.
The Woman's Suffrage Amendment.
Very good.
Woodrow Wilson was president.
That's very, very good indeed. Did you recognize the accent of our senator there, Senator Hill?
It sounded natural.
It did sound natural to you, yeah. Senator Ball, you were
like Tom Heflin.
You were about to say the same thing as your colleague, I'm
right.
I'm sure. Now the second of these congressional speeches.
It's an invasion of the rights of individuals. It will curb ambition and rob business of its incentive to create fortunes and thus deprive hospitals and scientific research of their chief support.
Senator Hill again.
Prohibition Amendment.
You think so?
The administration of Woodrow Wilson.
Well, now, how do you make that out to be the Prohibition Amendment, Senator?
Well,
you don't mind my arguing, do you?
They use liquor in hospitals, and they...
Yes, but it's not the chief support of hospitals,
right? No, it's not the chief support of hospitals, and of course there was a division of opinion yesterday among doctors about the use of it.
Heavens, you argue like a congressman, Senator. Mr. Kieran?
Would that be the income tax amendment?
I should think that would be more likely. How do you defend that, Mr. Kieran?
Well, because the Senator risk money.
Yes, I think, Senator Hill, that would be
I think
Mr.
Kieran is right. I see he's a better expert on income tax than I am.
And I'll try the third and last. That's one wrong.
The use of it impairs the fighting ability of our men. It befogs the minds of our workers, unnerves their hands, and affects their efficiency. It brutalizes the father and is the curse of every home.
Senator Ball.
The Prohibition Amendment under President Wilson.
Yes. There's your Prohibition Amendment. That's a much better argument, Senator, don't you think?
Oh, I agree thoroughly.
By the way, Mr. Kieran, did you say under whose presidency the income tax was adopted?
No, I don't, but
would you like to?
I think it was in Wilson's administration.
Any dissent? Mr. Adams?
I think it was probably in Taft's administration.
That's quite right, Mr. Adams.
Well, it was enforced in Wilson's. It was first enforced in Wilson's administration.
That might be, but adopted by Congress in 1990.
You recall in that connection that an earlier date Congress passed an act attempting to levy an income tax.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court held that act unconstitutional. Judge Sharris, Mr. Justice Sharris, handed down the decision.
Hey, you knew everything about this, but the answer to the question, Senator. Very good. We did get one wrong out of that, and that sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Murphy and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and sends us on to a question from Douglas L. Hunt of Birmingham, Alabama, Senator Hill's home state and proudly our of him. Now try this one. Recite three lines of poetry, three or four, that might appeal to a glazier. In other words, any line of poetry that might have the word, well, Mr. Kieran?
About Hamlet, the glass of fashion and the mold of form.
That'll be very good. The glass of fashion and the mold of form. Now, a couple of other lines that might be interesting to a glazier. What else does a glazier deal with, Mr. Adams?
I don't know. Come stand to your glasses steady. Hurrah for the next who dies.
Are you talking to the senators?
I don't know.
Very good, Mr. Adams.
Are you?
Mr. Kieran?
To hold, as it were, the mirror up to nature.
That's a very nice one, yes. And there's a line from Matthew Arnold, eternal passion, eternal pain, which might get by under... Perhaps Senator Ball and Senator Hill, you'd like to resign from this little organization. Try this one now from Mrs. Rose Engelhardt of Sunnyside, Long Island, New York. Here's an interesting question. In addition to Cordell Hull, name a representative of the United States at the recent Moscow conferences. Any other single United States representative? Senator Ball.
James Hunt, assistant.
Yes. Can you name another? Mr. Adams?
I think Mr. W. Averill Harriman was there.
Yes, indeed.
Whose birthday is next Monday.
Oh, congratulations. You have a little book in which you keep all these birthdays?
No, it's mine, too.
Well, that was one of the most cleverly worked in remarks.
Vincent Astor's.
Well, I hope Astor and Harriman get all the presents, Adams. Now, in addition to Anthony Eaton, name a representative of the United Kingdom at the Moscow conferences. That's a little more difficult. Just one other. There were, of course, a fairly large group of assistants to Mr. Eaton. Can you name a single one? Sir Archibald Clark Carr would be one. Mr. William Strang, a Russian expert, I believe. General Sir Hastings Ismay was still another. Now, in addition to Vyacheslav Molotov, name a representative of the Soviet Union at those conferences, Senator Ball.
Maxim Litvinov was there.
That's right. Maxim Litvinov, formerly ambassador to Washington from the Soviet Union. Marshal Voroshilov. And there are a number of others, of course. Well, that gives us two out of three and sends us on to this question from Melvin Rowell of Baltimore. Name the motion picture or work of fiction in which the leading character commits murder and then disposes of the body in the following way. He disposes of it by burying it in an arbor. Burying it in an arbor. In what motion picture or novel does that episode occur? Somehow, Senator Hill, I might expect you to know the answer to that one. It's in Senator Ball? Is that your hand?
Leslie Ford's detective novels, The Body is... It's one of her Washington stories, Murder of a...
There you have me. I'm not sure. I've never read it, and it may quite possibly be. A more famous one, perhaps, is the episode in Margaret Mitchell's Gone with the Wind, in which Scarlett O'Hara shoots a Yankee soldier and then buries him in an arbor. Does that come back to you, Senator? I thought possibly...
It does.
You might remember that as a pleasant episode, perhaps? Well, that gives us one wrong. Now try this. Name the work of fiction in which the leading character, after committing a murder, disposes of the body by burying it under the planks of the floor. Mr. Curran.
That is Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart.
That's right. That is exactly right. A narrator and a telltale heart. Senator Ball, you had your hand up. What were you going to say?
That's the one I was thinking of.
You've got the idea. You can be on this show now for the rest of your life. That's all there is to this show. Just following Kieran's lead.
Well, I was thinking of the Harvard professor who killed a man, tried to destroy the body by putting it in lime.
Yes.
And recalled the body was destroyed, all except the teeth. And they recognized the deceased person by the teeth and convicted the professor.
And
the professor was from Harvard.
He was?
Yes, he was from Harvard.
Well, do you think this is the time to bring that up?
As I recall, his name was, I believe, was Webster.
Yes, that's right. You Confederates have long memories, don't you? Try this one. The work of might be a play in which the leading character, after committing murder, disposes of the body by carrying it off in a car. An automobile. Carrying it away. Mr. Kieran.
Well, in a slight case of murder, they keep running corpses around in cars.
I don't remember it. I don't remember it. I should think it's in Watch on the Rhine, both in the movie and the play, in which the character who's played by Mr. Paul Lucas commits the murder and then bundles the body off into a car and carries it off. I guess we muffed that one. That sends $57 in world bonds and stamps to Mr. Rowell and a set Albert Britannica. Now, here's a question for the food department, covered by our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer. How do they ever settle the controversy, Ben, of eating soup versus drinking it?
Well, nowadays, that depends on the soup. But there was a time when it was considered poor manners to eat a soup. Books of etiquette even went so far as to caution the cook to remove meat and vegetables from soup before serving, so there wouldn't be any question about drinking it. I'm certainly glad that bit of nonsense went out of fashion, because you'll want to eat every bit of Heinz vegetable soup. In fact, that's about the most enjoyable use you ever could put a spoon to. Dipping into that steaming broth, glistening with vegetables. In Heinz old-fashioned vegetable soup, they're all blended together, simmered long and slowly till every vegetable, every drop of broth, is seasoned through and through with the rich essence of beef marrow. That's what country folks used to call the heart of real vegetable soup. And real vegetable soup, like Heinz, is a wonderful standby these days. It's the good, stout kind that sticks to your ribs, and gives you all the meat-flavored vegetables you can eat in one flopping bowlful. So keep Heinz condensed vegetable soup around, and you'll never lack for something extra good for lunch or supper.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. Now try this one, gentlemen, from Richard Kosicki of St. Joseph, Michigan. Who were these fathers and sons of fact or fiction who played the same roles? For example, this father and son were both senators. Senator Ball.
Bankhead... father and son were both senators.
Were they brothers or were they father and son? Senator Hill?
They were father and son, and then another son was Speaker of the House representative.
Ah, yes. They're prolific, the bankers, yes, aren't they? Mr. Kieran?
Senator Lodge from Massachusetts.
That was grandfather.
Grandfather.
Yes,
that's a generation among the Lodges.
Right.
I think just as good an answer as Senator Balls is Robert La Follette Sr. and La Follette Jr. Would that not be right? How about a case in which father and son were both prime ministers of England?
The Pitts.
Hill.
The Pitts.
The Pitts, yes. What were their first names?
William and...
That's right. William and William. That's right, yes. William Pitt Sr. and William Pitt Jr. This game is really easier than you think. Now, here is a case. This is a father and son of fiction, not a fact, who both courted the same lady. Who were they? A pair of father and son who both courted the same lady.
Mr. Kieran, does that come back to you?
No.
Surprise. Sir Pitt Crawley and Rawdon Crawley quoted whom, Mr. Kieran?
Becky Sharp.
Becky Sharp.
Yes, in Vanity Fair. Well, we got one wrong about that. That's right, Senator Hill. Now, how about this one from Gene Van Wyck of Paterson, New Jersey? That is a very good question. Here are the final lines of three poems about our history, poems that we all learn in school. What events do they commemorate, and what are the opening lines? I'll give you the final ones. There are going to be three sets of them. We have to get all. They have left unstained what there they found, freedom to worship God. Mr. Adams?
The breaking waves dashed high. Landing of the Pilgrim Fathers by Mrs. F. D. Hemans.
Very good. That's a perfect answer. And you were about to give us the whole first stanza. Could you? Do you think you could?
We sang it at graduation.
Yes. Well, maybe I'd better pass on to question two, because you may sing it now. The breaking waves dashed high on a stern,
rock-bound coast.
And the woods, come, gentlemen.
And the woods against the stormy sky, their giant branches toss.
That's perfect, Mr. Adams. Very good. Now, here is another set of lines that end a poem. Give us the beginning. Tell us what event the poem commemorates. Spirit that made these heroes dare to die and leave their children free, bid time and nature gently spare the shaft we raise to them and thee. Mr. Kieran.
By the rude bridge that arched the flood, their flag to April's breeze unfurled, here once the embattled farmers stood and fired the shot heard round the world.
That's right, Mr. Kieran.
Emerson.
Who wrote the poem? Emerson, and what did he...
Commemorated the Battle of Lexington.
Battle of Concord.
Concord.
Yes.
It's over the Concord River.
Yes.
Very nice bridge.
No plugs.
Well, they called him the Siege of Concord, didn't they?
They did indeed. And now, that's still a darn good poem, isn't it, Mr. Kieran? Sounds very good. How about this one? And give her to the God of Storms, the Lightning and the Gale. Mr. Adams.
Hold Ironsides. I tear her tattered ensign down, long has it waved on high. And many an eye has danced to see that banner in the sky! Exclamation point.
And how did Mr. Holmes, who was, of course, the father of the late Justice Holmes, happen to write that poem, Mr. Adams?
Well, they were about to destroy the frigate Constitution, I think it was.
Yes.
And he wrote that piece, and I think they didn't do same.
You bet they didn't. That's very good and very true. 3 out of 3. Now try this one from William Essling of St. Paul, Minnesota. Senator Ball's home state. Who were these successful presidential candidates and their campaign managers? I'm just going to give you 3 sets of hints. Now we have to get 2 out of 3. In this case, the candidate was born in Ohio, and his campaign manager was born in Ohio. Now, there's only one set that will satisfy that. Senator Hill.
William McKinley, Mark Hanna.
That's right. William McKinley and Mark Hanna. Mr. Adams, are you going to get us another...
No, that's the only one I know.
Good enough. Right. Now, here is a case in which the candidate was born in New York, and his campaign manager born in New York. That's not so easy either, Senator Ball.
Yeah, Franklin D. Roosevelt and Jim Farley.
That's right, during the 32 and 36 campaigns. Now, here's a tougher one. The candidate was born in Virginia. His campaign manager was born in Georgia.
That was Woodrow Wilson and William G. McAdoo.
Very good. And what campaign?
That was the Wilson campaign of 1912.
That's right. Yes, very good. 3 out of 3 on that, gentlemen. Apparently too easy. Try this one from Ruth Ann Turner of Alamo, California. What impersonator in literature gave himself away by doing the following things? Get 2 out of 3. First, by the way, he threaded a needle. What impersonator gave himself away? Mr. Senator Ball.
That was Tom Sawyer in Huckleberry. No. Oh, it's Huckleberry Finn.
Uh-huh.
Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn.
That's right.
When he was masquerading as a girl.
That's right, yes. How long ago is it since you've read that, Senator? You don't mind my being personal.
Many years.
Well, that's a very good memory. Yes, he brought the... How did he try to thread the needles, Senator? Have you ever tried to thread a needle?
He held the thread and pushed the needle at it.
Yes.
Instead of... always holds the needle steady and pushes the thread at
yes,
it.
Yes, that's the idea. That's what it says in
that's
the book.
That's what they say, anyhow.
Now, what one gave himself away by a technique of painting? The particular technique of painting that he employed gave him... Senator Ball.
Wasn't that Priam? In Arnold Bennett's novel?
That's right. Why are you a senator? And you can make a living doing this sort of thing.
I remember the picture of Dorothy Gish and Roland Young made of that. A number of years ago.
Yes, I think there's a later version in which Monty Woolley plays Priam Farr, who's supposed to be dead, and then he gives himself away at a later point in the story. as a painter because his technique cannot be imitated by anyone else. That's very good. Don't you think he's pretty good, Mr. Chairman?
Well.
Good senator. Mm-hmm. Now, how about this one? What impersonator gave himself away by inspecting arms rather than ornaments? Mr. Chairman.
Achilles.
Tell us the story. That's quite right.
He was being hidden away in a girl's school, and Ulysses, I believe, wasn't it, came around and was going to uncover the disguise, and he put a lot of ornaments out, and also he put a sword in there, or a couple of swords, and Achilles picked up the sword instead of the silks and satins and the trinkery.
That's right. That's it exactly. Well, did they have girls' schools in those days, Mr. Kim?
Oh, they were way ahead of us.
Now here's our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, who has a suggestion for gratifying a winter palate.
When the cold begins to strengthen, as the old almanacs used to put it, hot soup takes on a special kind of goodness. It belongs on a winter's table, same as logs belong in a grate. And the warmth and comfort promised by a bowl of Heinz old-fashioned vegetable soup begins when you draw up your chair and the teasing, fragrant steam starts playing around with your appetite. There's a pleasant moment of speculation, then a small sip to try out the temperature and the taste. And sure enough, it's just as good as it looks and smells. All the satisfying, rich flavor of beef marrow mingling with over a dozen different vegetables. Heinz condensed vegetable soup has that unmistakable home-cooked taste because it's made the old home way, simmered long and slowly in small batches so that every kettleful gets the personal touch of a master cook. That's Heinz vegetable soup with beef stock. Then there are two other varieties, vegetarian vegetable without any meat and vegetable beef soup with emphasis on beef. Do try them.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. And now how about this one, gentlemen, from Carmen Hatch of San Francisco. If you followed these literary directions, they come from books or poems, where would you find yourself? Get 2 out of 3. Here's the first direction. Second to the right, and then straight on till morning. Doesn't seem to make very much sense. Does that come back to any of you, gentlemen? Well, you'd find the line in James Barry's play Peter Pan, and those are the directions for getting to where Peter Pan is. So you'd be visiting Peter Pan if you proceeded second to the right and then straight on till morning. I don't think there's any great black mark against any of you gentlemen for not knowing that. Now, how about this? Here's another set of directions. Over the edge of the purple down, where the single lamplight gleams. That's very hard, too. Over the edge of the purple down, where the single lamplight gleams. How about a guess on that? We'll take a wild guess. Senator Ball.
It wouldn't be,
No. Well, very good. That was very, very, very good.
Is some poet.
It's a very good poet and one of Mr. Kieran's favorites, matter of fact. Mr. Kieran, care to guess now?
Well, that's either Masefield or Kipling.
It's Kipling. It's from The Brushwood Boy by Kipling.
Oh, it's one of the chapter headings.
Yes, one of the chapter headings. That's a tough one. Know ye the road to the merciful town that is hard by the sea of dreams over the edge of the purple down where the single lamplight gleams. That's a tough one. And now, if you follow this direction, where would you get to? It isn't far from London. It isn't far from London. Mr. Kieran.
Kew. Kew
is
right. Down to Kew in Lilac Time.
In Lilac Time, in Lilac Time. And who wrote the poem, Mr.
Noyes.
Alfred Noyes, a poem called The Barrel of. And we got only 1 out of 3 on that. And sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Hatch and a set of the Britannica. And now, gentlemen, try this one from Leo Lemberg of Chicago. Identify, if you can, each of these people in the news. The first one wasn't properly dressed, so he had to rush back for his missing garment. This was fairly recently. He wasn't dressed properly and had to rush back to put on what he'd forgotten to dress himself. And who was that, gentlemen? Does any of you read anything other than the war news? It was Supreme Court Justice Hugo Black who forgot to put on his dignified judicial robes and ascended the Supreme Court platform, just dressed in ordinary pair of pants and coat. A horrible error. You remember that now, Senator Ball?
No, I never read about it.
Why? You remember it, Senator Hill? Wasn't all Washington talking about it? I should imagine, knowing Washington. Try this one. A work stoppage in Washington recently was caused by an Army captain. Who was that? Mr. Kieran?
Clark Gable.
That's right.
He came back. He's a captain in the Army Air Force, yes. And he reported at the Pentagon Building
Yeah?
Officially, and I guess all the young ladies, their hearts were in their throats or somewhere out of place.
That's quite right. They all turned out to see him upset the Pentagon building even more than it is already upset. Now, try this one. This one received an honorary degree in a city that he had recently conquered. He received an honorary degree, Senator Hill.
General Clark in Naples, from the University of Naples.
That's quite right. He was made an honorary doctor of political science by the University of Naples. Well, that does give us 2 out of 3 and sends us on to a question from Staff Sergeant Milton Marmon of Greensboro, North Carolina. Let's get all on this. It's not a very hard question. Identify a United States general who gave his name to a saddle. Senator Hill.
McClellan.
McClellan is right, yes.
Nice George B. McClellan.
Yes, it's nice of you to mention his name. As he was the Union general.
George Brenton McClellan.
Pardon?
Brenton was his middle name.
Brenton was his middle name, right. The things you know, Frank. Identify a British general who gave his name to a belt. Mr. Adams.
General Sam Brown.
That's quite right. And the belt was called?
Sam Brown.
Attaboy. And what German general, to go down several pegs, gave his name to a pair of shoes? Mr. Kieran.
Blucher.
Blucher, yes. Blucher shoes. What do they look like?
They're heavy.
Very heavy, big tops on them. Now I think you'll have time for this one from Bess L. Bittner of San Francisco. Who in literature gave these invitations? The first is, against my will, I am sent to bid you come to dinner. Mr. Kieran.
That is in Much Ado About Nothing. That was,
That's quite right. Beatrice inviting whom?
Inviting the fellow, Benedict.
That's right, yes. Now here's another invitation. Come all you rounders. Come all you rounders. Mr. Kieran again.
If you want to hear the story about a great engineer, Casey Jones was the rounder's name.
On a heavy big 8-wheeler of a mighty thing. Very good. And now here's the last of the 3 invitations. Haste thee, nymph. Mr. Adams.
And bring with thee jest and youthful jollity.
Yes, who issued the invitation?
Milton.
Yes, first name?
Jackie.
And in what poem we should find it, Mr. Adams?
Probably in L'Allegro.
In L'Allegro, that's quite right, and that gives us 3 out of 3, and that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Senator Ball and Senator Hill, for helping with the fun this evening. Tonight, H.J. Hines Company has paid out $171 in war bonds and stamps and 3 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, our regular trio of Mr. Levant, Mr. Adams, and Mr. Kieran will be on hand, and their guest will be our old friend Gregory Ratoff, director of the forthcoming feature film, Song of Russia. Remember, send your questions with the correct answers to Information, Please, 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. And now, Ben Grauer.